Hello, my name is Kate Russo, and my novel is Until Allison.
Kate Russo's new novel, Until Allison, is a literary thriller that explores class, gender, violence and silence, and the ultimate horror, junior high. The novel follows the evolution and ultimate dissolution of a friendship between Allison and Rachel, all in the immediate hours and days following Allison's mysterious death. It touches on some tough issues like bullying, navigating politics during your college years, and the contrast between fact and fiction. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Goulet, and here's my conversation with Kate Russo. So Until Allison is a mystery, but even more than that, it's a character study. Can you describe Until Allison for our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I love that description. For me, it started out as a character study more than anything else, and the thriller aspects of it came later. So to me, it still is very much at its heart a character study, and it follows Rachel and Allison, who are kind of the two young Italian residents of their small town in Maine, which means that their families have tried to get them together, basically. So it's Rachel Nardelli and Allison Petrucci. And despite the fact that they're from very different classes, very different walks of life, their parents want them to know each other. And it's really the story of these two girls going from friends to not being friends, but are always sort of in each other's lives. And Allison dies and Rachel lives. And it's really Rachel's retelling of what it was like to know Allison.
There's an ongoing push and pull between writing forms, journalism and creative writing. At one point, Professor Stannard remarks in a response to a question about why she chose creative writing, "I prefer to lie." This book is a novel, and we rely on Rachel's memory, but she also works as a journalist at her college newspaper. How reliable is Rachel as a narrator?
That's an interesting question, and one where I feel like I still don't 100% know. And that's one of the things that I really like about writing Rachel, and liked about writing Rachel, is that I, even as I was writing her, I didn't know if I was necessarily believing her take on things. A lot of times I was getting advice along the way while writing this novel that Rachel was being too hard on herself. And I was sort of like, okay, well, I think that's got something to do with me. And of course, Stannard's line of "I prefer to lie" was sort of my own realization, which is, when I was in college, I was doing college journalism and it wasn't for me, and I learned the hard way and I realized I prefer to lie. I mean, there's always a better way to tell the story than the truth, it feels like, which is dangerous territory, but nonetheless feels true.
I noticed the phrase "until Allison" repeated a couple of times throughout the text. The word "until" makes me think of an abrupt change or a turning point. And then there was also this sentence, "until now, until Celine and the power of love, until Ethan." There's a lot to unpack with that "until," because with Allison, we could be referring to many points on the timeline, couldn't we?
I think originally the Until Allison was very much about, and I think that the line might have even been removed from the book in the end, but it was something to the essence of before Allison's death, after Allison's death, and sort of, until, basically until this happened, until Allison died, Rachel was one person. And then after she died, Rachel felt like she was another. And so that was where it was originally born from. But I think it became clear that that's just the way Rachel's mind worked, that everything had its cause and effect is very apparent to her. And so when something happens and it changes her outlook, everything becomes the sort of before and after of that thing.
Let's talk about politics for a moment, because there were campus politics. Cam is a young Republican. Rachel's friend Jen is the opposite. Jen is repeatedly advocating for school causes and getting recognition in the school paper. But then, I'm also thinking about Rachel's parents. At one time, the one time Cam visited her home, he asked them, "So you guys listen to a lot of NPR?" And but then later her dad reached behind him to turn down NPR. So talk about how Rachel is influenced by those around her. Where does she land on the political spectrum, or does she even know?
I think she doesn't know. And That is because I think she gets to college and she's been raised by these not only liberal parents, but very class conscious parents who want her to know, number one, that she comes from a loving, middle class, comfortable family. They have everything they need. There are people out there who have so much less, but then there are also these awful people out there who have so much more. And her parents really see it that way. And she's been raised her whole life. And then she goes to college and she meets this guy like Cam, who is one of these people who has everything he needs and so much more. And she is kind of lured in by that. I mean, it's a weird kind of rebellion from the way she was raised. And I think she doesn't know what she believes. And that is, I think, part of what makes her the unreliable narrator that she is. I think I was the same in college, you know. I was raised in a very liberal household, and I went to college and I dated a Republican, and I'm very, very liberal now. But at that time in my life, I didn't know. I didn't know what to believe. But that's what college is for, isn't it? Is to figure that out.
While we're on the subject of Cam, I noted a couple of other moments that involved him. Professor Stannard noted, "There's one just like him in every year, a young man that confuses his privilege with authority." And then there was this comment he made to Rachel. "Anyone at a debutante ball with the last name ending in a vowel is usually wearing an apron." As an author, is there any pleasure in creating despicable characters?
Yes, I think so. I think so. You know, I've always tried to be super careful not to make them so despicable that they become quite flat and one-dimensional. But at the end of the book, I hope I give a little bit of balance as to why Cam is behaving the way that he is. But you know, unfortunately, that's a line from life. A boyfriend said that to me. He took me to his parents' country club and said that, you know, my last name being Russo, he said, "Well, you know, normally somebody with a last name like yours would be wearing an apron, so I should have been privileged to be in this scenario." So I'd like to say I made that up completely, but I didn't. That was taken from life.
I have a quick question about structure. I noticed that there were, traditional numbered chapters, but then there were some interstitial chapters where they were titled instead of numbered. Can you talk about this structure?
Yeah, well, that was one of the last things to come along. So there really it came down to how do we integrate this junior high material? So you're reading about Rachel and Allison in the present day, which is 2016 in this book. But as Rachel begins to understand what happened to Allison, she's thinking back and back. And so there's all of this junior high story. So there were a couple of drafts where that material came in, and it was through the form of essays. So Rachel was writing essays for a class that Stannard was teaching, and all of the junior high material came in the form of these essays. And then I tried after that a more kind of one chapter was present day, one chapter was junior high, and it was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And that sort of read much more like a thriller. But at the end of the day, we were giving the junior high story maybe a little bit too much time. And so where this was where we landed on how do we integrate this story. And it's really just kind of about these big, you are kind of taking a break from the suspense of the thriller that's happening in the present day. And Rachel's just sort of telling you, okay, this is why I can't tell my colleagues on the newspaper that I know Allison. And so you get these kind of chunks where she explains that to the reader.
Although this novel is serious in nature, I found myself smiling and laughing as I read it. Rachel, at this one point, Rachel talks about an interaction in junior high. "Well done, Mr. Nugent." Mr. Jensen always referred to the boys in the class formally. "Go ahead, Misty." Mr. Jensen had no such formality for the girls. And I appreciated the nods to the not so recent past, like references to Kit from Knight Rider and Quark. Is Quark even still around? And then there was a description from Rachel about her dad. "He was a Mainer, for Christ's sake. Half the alphabet was lost on him." So talk to me about including humor in the book.
Humor is my happy place, which maybe sounds like a silly thing to say, but it's my comfort zone. And that was my biggest fear when writing this book. I knew I wanted to write it. I'd been trying to write it for years, so it just needed to come out. But the book that I'd written previously, Superhost, is a much, much funnier book. And I didn't know if this was a bad idea to take this pivot and the humor just came kind of naturally as I was going along. I needed it for myself. I needed to entertain myself. I needed to make myself feel better while I was writing this book. But also, it comes down to that thing where I just feel like humor and heartache are never, ever very far apart from each other. So when you're dealing with heartache, it just feels like the deeper the pain gets, the easier it is for the funny moments to occur. They just, for me, they always occur together.
You dedicated this book to your parents, and in the acknowledgments, you say that they are the book's moral compass and yours. You also mentioned your sister, Emily, in the acknowledgments and her endless publishing world knowledge. And this feels intrusive, but I wouldn't be much of an interviewer if I didn't point out that your family is kind of a big deal in the publishing world. Do they listen to a lot of NPR?
They do. My parents listen to an incredible amount of NPR. It's a joke. So I'm the kind of person who makes my dinner and I sit down and I watch whatever my husband and I watch whatever show we're really, really into. And so my dad is always saying, "Well, you watch so many more shows than I do." He says, "I don't understand when you do that." And I say, "Dad, I do it when you're listening to NPR because they listen to, Fresh Air and Marketplace every night." And it blows his mind that I don't do that, or I certainly don't do it on a regular basis, as it's airing,
Do you want to tell our listeners about your family?
Sure. I am Richard Russo's daughter, novelist Richard Russo's daughter, and my sister Emily Russo owns Print a Bookstore here in Portland, Maine. And my mother is neither a bookstore owner nor a writer, but is probably the most voracious reader that I know. So that's my family.
Do you have a hope for what readers will take away from this book?
I think the most important thing to me that I realized, that actually the first line came from my editor, Sally Kim, when we did the first round of edits. She read the book and she said to me, "This book just reminds me that nobody deserves anything." And I just wrote it down. And when I went back into edits, it became the first line of the book. And I don't think I quite realized how much I needed to hear that when she said it. For my own sort of, like we were just talking about, I'm the daughter of somebody who's an incredibly successful writer, and I don't deserve that. And when people have bad things happen to them, they don't deserve those things either. And to labor on this concept of who deserves what, it's a false start, and it leads to cruelty. And that's what so much of this book is about, is why we're cruel. And where this cruelty comes from. And if people can begin to understand that not only, within our lives, we've all been bullied more than likely, we've all bullied someone more than likely, and we've all stood around and watched bullying happen and done nothing. And we need to accept these things. We need to accept it and understand our roles in it, because it's not going to get better if we don't.
We have talked about a lot. Is there anything that you would like to talk about that I haven't asked?
Oh gosh, I don't think so. I think we've covered it pretty well. I think this is, for me, this is a return to Maine. My last book took place in London, and this feels like such a central Maine story to me. Central Maine's kind of having its moment. Ron Curry's most recent book takes place in Waterville. Jessica Berger Gross has written a book that takes place in Waterville, all that came out sort of in the last 3 months. And I think mine is the last one about Waterville to come out, at least for a while. So it just really feels like Central Maine is having its moment. And it's really nice. It's really nice to have these stories being told about a group of people that doesn't get their stories told very often.
Well, the book is Until Allison. Kate Russo, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much.
That was Kate Russo, author of the book Until Allison, which was published by G.P. Putnam Sons. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. we get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.